Hello and welcome to the Human Body Fundamentals Podcast. I'm your host, Caroline Stoll. Each week, I speak with experts to learn the ins and outs of the human body. This podcast aims to bring forth informative conversations about why it is important to know the function of specific body parts, systems, and rhythms. We will also be covering common disorders and problematic conditions, as well as restorative treatments and procedures. I'm so glad you're here. Now let's get started. Hi everyone, this episode is going to be a little different today. It was planned to be an interview with my friend and Rolfer, Bruce Schoenfeld from Santa Monica, California, and we did meet and record an episode on fascia and Rolfing, but we ended up having so many conversations that flowed in different directions, and we were bouncing ideas and commentary and concepts like off of each other, which made the conversation pretty abstract and non-linear. So I didn't feel that it would go well with my series organization. It was an excellent interview and conversation. So I probably will post it in the future as an extra or as like a special episode. All in all, Bruce is practically a genius when it comes to the musculoskeletal system and fascia. He's making a docuseries right now, actually, that's called The Secret Life of Fascia, which I highly recommend watching. You can find it on Vimeo, and part one is out now. That's over an hour long, and there will be a total of 6 parts to the entire docuseries. Nevertheless, I spent quite some time, hours and hours, researching fascia in academic journals, YouTube videos, podcasts, and other online articles. But the majority of the information I am giving to you is derived from scholarly academic research articles and university course anatomy videos. I am really, really looking forward to sharing all that I've learned about fascia with you. It's unbelievably interesting to me, and I hope that it is with you as well. Let's start. So I'll begin by saying that as an anatomical structure, it's a matrix or web of connective tissue that surrounds and holds every muscle, organ, blood or lymph vessel, bone, and nerve fiber in place. Yes, nerve fibers. Tiny, 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 tiny. Not only does it surround every anatomical structure, but it's also woven through the structures too. Because it surrounds every organ, muscle, bone, etc., that means that there are different textures and thicknesses and compositions of it in the body. For example, sometimes it looks like a super thin spider web where it's fatty, stretchy, little slimy, and other times it could be more solid and thicker and tighter. This brings us to the question, what is fascia made out of? Fascia is primarily made out of collagen and elastic tissue fibers. It really depends on the type of fascia we're working with, though, like I said earlier. There are 3 main categories of fascia: superficial, deep, and subserous fascia. We'll begin by talking about superficial fascia. So superficial fascia is a loose connective tissue related to the skin. Another name for it is the hypodermis, which is the fatty lowest layer of the skin. The top skin is epidermis. Top layer is epidermis. The middle layer is the dermis, and the third is the hypodermis, or superficial fascia. It's typically situated right above and is connected to the deep fascia, which I mentioned before. So superficial fascia actually contains fat, blood vessels, lymph, glands such as sweat glands, and nerves. I'm not really going to get into it. It's just too complicated, but there are even two sub-layers of superficial fascia, just to let you know. The composition of superficial fascia is made up of loosely intertwined collagen and elastic fibers. We're briefly going to get into the difference between collagen and elastic fibers because it's good to know and because it will help us understand our body's connective tissues better. Start off with collagen. Collagen fibers are the tougher, stronger fibers. And one way to remember that is to think about college sports. It's just a lot harder and more intense than high school sports. College partying is another one. I mean, it's pretty much the most hardcore partying for the most part. I mean, especially if you're a gaucho. But nevertheless, collagen equals tough, strong fibers. Elastic fibers, on the other hand, are stretchy and springy, like rubber bands. It's what allows a structure to go back to its original shape after it's moved in a certain form or direction. Now, we're back talking about superficial fascia. Superficial fascia varies in thickness throughout the body. It's thicker in the torso and legs, but a little thinner in the arms. And it tends to be thinner for females and overall thinner peripherally. So peripheral means away from the center. And when I'm using it in this term, it refers to areas away from the center of the body or of like a body part. So the superficial fascia generally becomes thinner when we get to our fingers, our ankles, top of our feet, and so on. Sometimes superficial fascia divides up to create pockets and support for major veins and lymph vessels. There are also many nerve fibers around in superficial fascia as well. What is a nerve fiber? Well, a common scientific term for it is an axon. It's a thin strand, smaller than a human hair, of course, that electrical impulses with information flow through from one neuron to another. Okay, let's move on to deep fascia. So deep fascia is normally right below the superficial fascia. It covers and envelops the muscles, bones, ligaments, nerves, and blood vessels. It actually surrounds every muscle we have in the body. And the deep fascia in the limbs are typically called dense connective tissues. Deep fascia contains a lot of collagen fibers since it needs to be strong to hold together our bulkier, larger structures in place, like the heavy muscles and bones. There's actually barely any elastic fiber in deep fascia. All right, I can't wait to tell you this. Something that's very interesting about deep fascia is that one form of it acts as a partition through muscle groupings. These are called intermuscular septas, septa, S-E-P-T-A. And the best way I can describe intermuscular septas is relating it to a raw chicken breast. So, you know when you're slicing raw chicken breast and you see these white web-like linings that surround the meat? Well, that's comparable to the deep fascia in humans. Now think about when you're flipping the chicken breast over or you pull it apart from each other to get a good cut. You might realize that there are so many different parts of this chicken breast, like a thinner section or a smaller one that has a slightly darker tint. It may be a little bit bumpier or curvier, but they're all attached by this fascia-like layer. Yes, it's all chicken breast muscle, but it's not some large, even block of chicken breast. There are muscular layers or groups of muscles. Well, we have that in our body too, as you can imagine. We have so many different layers or groupings of muscles, actually. For example, there are 26 different muscles in our neck alone. So the lining that I was talking about that connects and separates the groupings of muscles are called intermuscular septas. Now let's relate this back to the human thigh. We have three general divisions of muscles in the thigh. The anterior grouping, also known as our quads, which include four muscles, hence quad for four. The medial grouping, which has two muscles. And the posterior grouping, which are the hamstrings, and there are two muscles in that grouping as well. Here's an even more exciting part. These groupings are also conveniently compartmentalized because of nerve supply. There's one large nerve channel for each division. And the last thing I'm going to say about intermuscular septas is that it also prevents infections from spreading to different groups. That's so cool. Another function of deep fascia is to protect and to keep the tendons closely connected to the joints. Tendons connect the muscles to the bones, and they are thick, deep fascial bands that hold the tendons in place. These are called retinacula. That's the plural word for these deep fascial bands. The singular word for that is retinaculum. The best way I can describe this to you is to try to animate it. So imagine you go to the doctor and you're in the doctor's office and you see posters on the wall that are diagrams of the human body muscular system. You can see in a light red color the muscles throughout the body. But you will also notice that there are occasional white regions in certain areas of the human body too. And they're located around the knees, the wrists, and the sternum area. If you take out your phone right now or your computer and you look up the muscular system in Google Images, a diagram will show up and you'll see the white parts that I'm talking about, which is pretty cool. But anyway, retinacula are the tight, strong stabilizers and protectors of the tendons. Deep fascia also acts as a compression, which helps pump the blood vessels in the muscles, so it helps return blood to the heart. Now, one last thing I'm going to bring up about deep fascia is that many academic research articles show that emotions and memories are actually stored in fascia. When I was in college, I took a course that certified me to teach yoga in prisons. Actually, it wasn't through UCSB. It was through a separate program called the Prison Yoga Project. And I went down to San Diego for a weekend training. Anyway, I'm not certified in teaching yoga, so I haven't been able to teach yet, but the course was so impressionable and interesting that it changed my life forever. One of the most important things we learned in that course is that most prisoners have what's known as complex trauma. When someone has complex trauma, it means that they have a series of traumas, such as physical abuse, physical trauma, emotional trauma, sexual trauma, and all of these traumas are built on each other because they weren't discharged or healed or released from the body. According to the research provided for us in the Prison Yoga Project course, yoga was the number fourth best way to heal and discharge complex trauma. Our instructor taught us that the number one best way to heal complex trauma is through massage. Now, I understand that that's a big claim. I'm just reiterating what I learned in this specific course. So when I was reading these academic articles and all of these research papers, I am not surprised at all that we store emotion and memories in our fascia. If you go to a massage therapist, you'll see that there are Kleenexes, tissues, next to the bed. And there's always tissues inside because it's common for people to start crying, for them to remember problems or their past hurts. They're just releasing all of this. I really enjoyed this part of my fascial research and didn't really get a chance to delve into it too deep. So I'll probably do an episode solely on how fascia stores emotion and memories. Definitely would want to bring in a specialist for it too. Okay, the last category of fascia is called subserous fascia or visceral and parietal fascia. This gets absolutely nuts. It took me a long time to understand it, but it's pretty epic. So in order for me to describe the subserous fascia, it would be best for us to talk about serous membranes. If you listen to my episode on the esophagus, you might remember Dr. Conway speaking about the squamous epithelium, which is also known as the esophageal lining. This is a mucous membrane lining. It's technically open. You eat food and it goes down your esophagus, which goes into the stomach and then exits your body. That is not serous membranous. Serous membranes are not open to the outside of our bodies. These membranes include layers and spaces just outside of the organs. So when we talk about subserous fascia, that means we're talking about the fascia surrounding the organs. The layer that's closest to the organ is visceral fascia. Only the visceral layer lies directly on the organ and is touching it. The parietal layer is actually just above or outside the visceral layer. Technically, in between those two layers is a lubricant or fluid, so these two fascial layers aren't touching. There's actually a pretty painful condition when these two layers are touching. We won't get into it now. I don't even have the notes about that. But one way you can remember that the parietal layer is on the outside is because it almost has the same root as peripheral. It doesn't. Peripheral is P-E-R and parietal is P-A-R. But peripheral means away from the center. So maybe that could kind of help you remember. But I don't want to confuse you, so just an idea. All in all, subserous fascia includes visceral and parietal fascia, and they encapsulate the organs. There are different names for visceral and parietal fascial layers, depending on what organ they surround. Around the lungs, these fascial layers are called the visceral pleura and parietal pleura, P-L-E-U-R-A. In the academic paper that I'm looking at right now, it says that these two pleural layers actually contain a lot of pain receptors. And by the way, the title of this article is called Pleura Space Anatomy. I just can't believe how deep and technical you can get. I mean, it's pretty, my mind is blown. I don't know if you can tell. All right, that is the end of this episode, part one of Fascia and Rolfing. Thank you so much to everyone who listened, tuned in. I really hope that you enjoyed learning the info and that the episode reminded you of how insanely intelligent and complex our bodies truly are. I know I was reminded of it. Thanks again, and hope to have you back next week.